One of the most uplifting shows on radio, No Glass Ceiling, introduces women in business who do just that, run their business, and women in business roles that once were taboo. Join me now for No Glass Ceiling on Business Radio X. My word, do we have an excellent crew with us today. It's so nice to be back with the show. Mark Bishop here. Of course, we're recording presenting live out of the Stuart Title Studio, which is on Broadway here in Tucson, Arizona. And if you haven't been to Arizona yet, you should do. Beautiful place. We've had lots of rain over this season for the monsoon season. Things are green everywhere. And soon it'll be cool again and all our snowbird friends will be coming back. So if you haven't been here, we suggest that you do, okay? The idea of the show, No Glass Ceiling, is to represent women who are successful in what they do. They're either in their own business, they've fought hard to build it and now they're successful, or it's women in corporate roles, not necessarily corporate America. It could be private concerns, it could be not-for-profits, but they have got to the top of their echelon and, boy, they've done exceptionally well to get there. And they're the people that we feature on this show, and they're uplifting, they're positive, they give you a lot of motivation, and that's the feedback I'm getting from our listeners, which is really good. My first guest today is Diane Kelly. She is the Chief Executive Officer of the Sandbrook Group, and they were once called the Sandbrook Benefits Group, LLC. Hi, Diane. How are you?
Good morning, Mark. Thank you.
You began your insurance career with Penn Mutual Life. They're a big name back in 78. It was way back then.
Yes, ma'am.
Way back. And you affiliated with Gordon Insurance in Tucson in 94, I think, which is now CBIZ, right?
CBIZ, correct.
CBIZ. Who are
right.
they? Who are they?
It's a large benefits firm. They also do accounting and some other services. And I stayed there for about 6 years after the CBIZ sale came in, and it was a publicly traded company, and the famous last words were, nothing's going to change. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, with corporate America, things do change. Mm-hmm. And I decided that I wanted to jump ship and go out on my own, which I had done other times before, but this time was really necessary
this
to get
it.
Out there.
So this is when you left them to form Sandbrook Benefits Group, LLC, which is now called Sandbrook Group, right?
That is correct.
So lots of changes going on there, girl, I bet. We're going to come back and delve into that. Susan Pisano, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. A New Yorker. Now, we won't hold that against her, okay? She's the founder and president of East End Business Consulting, Inc. It's a unique consulting company providing the best CFOs and accounting. But before you took the big leap, Susan, you served as a controller in several different industries, and that was responsible for all financial and operational decisions. Hello and welcome.
Good morning, Mark. It's good to be here.
What is a CFO other than it sounds like it would cost a lot of money? Do you charge a lot of money?
I don't charge a lot of money. A CFO is really the step up from your bookkeeper. Your bookkeeper is going to enter a lot of your data, financial data, but you need, it's, you know, what you put in is, you know, you need that information out to run your business. So you need financial tools to run your business. CFOs jump in and give you those tools, kind of peel back the onion, find out, you know, if you're making money or not making money. Hard to put a price tag on that.
It would be, indeed. And we're going to delve right into it, because if there's any businesses that need some support and understanding, you're going to get that today with Susan. It has taken a few years, but I pretty well have these diverse American accents down now. And you, young lady, are definitely from Jersey. Although, even since I last met you, you've milded a little bit. You know, you're not as strong there in that accent, are you?
Long Island, New York.
Long Island strong. Okay. Susan Pisano, that's going to be an interesting topic. We're going to get into that, what she goes to companies and what she does. She straightens them out, gets that whip out, or look out. Kim Adair, ladies and gentlemen, my next guest, has been a fixture in the Tucson business community for 20 years. She's a proud mom to Andrew and Grace and is married to her college sweetheart, Craig Adair. Is that correct?
That's correct.
There's a lot of college sweetheart marriages. I like to hear that. That's sort of like it's been going a long time, yes?
Yes, it sure has.
That's
yes.
Terrific. How did your life steer your career into Nova Home Loans, a big company here in Tucson?
Sure. So Nova Home Loans is a large regional mortgage lender in the Southwest, and I joined Nova about 10 years ago as the head of marketing, and eventually ended my career there as the senior vice president of marketing and business development. So I helped them grow their market share in each region. through marketing and advertising and business development efforts.
Well, pretty serious jobs there. What was the first one? Senior Vice President of Marketing and Business Development. Well, you wore a couple of hats, in fact. What sort of tricks did you get up to in those days, in those roles? Give us an idea.
Well, I think some of my favorite things were developing the ad campaigns that would help brand Nova into a household name in the many regions that we have branches in. So it was always fun to make sure that people knew who we were and knew who to call when they had a lending need, and added some charm and character and fun to those ad campaigns.
Well, you're going to tell us about some of those a little bit later on, okay? How many years all up did you give to Nova?
Oh, I was there almost 10 years, yes.
Okay, 10 years. Now in 2018, you've accepted the role of Executive Director / CEO of the Nova Home Loans Arizona Bowl. Congratulations on the appointment, Kim.
Thank you, thank you.
Well done indeed. In fact, this makes you one of only two women, right, running an NCAA bowl game.
That's correct.
All right. A bit of feather in your old cap there. A bit of a cheers, girls. What do you think
Woo!
For Kim, hey?
Congratulations.
Hip, hip, hooray. Well done. This is really breaking through the ceiling, isn't it? What color's red, eh? What color's
Free
red?
Free tickets for us, right, Kim?
You bet.
There you go. Well, hip, hip, hooray. Now, well done. Now, let's talk about what is NCAA. What's that stand for? For those
That's
that don't know.
The National Collegiate Athletic Association.
Okay. The National Collegiate. Now, we've had a few of these bowl games because we don't do sport on Business Radio X, but we do business if it's connected with sport. And believe me, this is a business. In the millions of dollars, this is a business. But what I'm excited about is where it goes. And so are you going to be when you find out. For the last few years, lots of money has gone to the right places through this particular project. Now, by the way, Kim, you're a past president, an active board member of the Boys and Girls Clubs here in Tucson, right?
I am, yes.
So here's a woman that really knows her stuff. Tell me a little bit about how you came to become the executive director, though, of the bowl.
Sure. As my role at Nova Home Loans as the senior vice president of marketing, I helped negotiate the title sponsorship for Nova Home Loans, becoming the title sponsor of the Arizona Bowl. And so now it's known as the Nova Home Loans Arizona Bowl. So I was a part of that from the very beginning, really before the bowl was even announced publicly. And then after the negotiations, I took a role as a executive committee member mm-hmm. for the board of the bowl. Mm-hmm. And so I have been intimately involved with the bowl since its very inception. And because of that experience and learning those first 3 years of how a bowl game is run, when our executive director, Alan Young, decided to retire this summer, the rest of the board came and asked if I would be interested in the position.
Very good. And were you set back at that, or did you just automatically say off the top, yep, I'll do it?
You know, I was very excited about the opportunity. I loved my Nova Home Loans family, and they have been super supportive through this transition, right, understanding that this is a terrific opportunity for me. And it's also a great way for them to be assured that their vision for this bowl mm-hmm. is actuated, and they understand that I believe in that same vision and philosophy. And so it was a very exciting opportunity, and I'm having a lot of fun with it.
That's fantastic. And before we move on to Susan here, just tell me again, who was it that started the bowl? Who were the original thinkers of this particular project?
Sure. So Ollie Farhang was the person behind the bowl, the one that brought all the parties together to make this happen. He, along with Mark Irvin and Fletcher McCusker, are our founders. Okay. The Arizona Sports and Entertainment Commission also helped bring the bowl to fruition, along with our bowl conference partners, the Mountain West and the Sun Belt.
Right. Well, good on them. That was a great, and that's what, number three is coming. Number four is coming
number
up.
Number four is coming
yeah,
up.
Yeah, well, we're going to be talking about that. Let's have a listen to Forget About It. That's East End Business Consulting lady. How did you come up with that name, East End Business Consulting?
Well, back in New York, I lived on the East End of Long Island. And ironically, when I came here to Tucson, I found a home on the east side of Tucson. So I kind of kept that name. It worked. I'm probably going to be rebranding because East End Business doesn't really say who we are uh-huh. and what we do. So it's worked so far, but we'll see what the future holds.
Well, if you do that, you're going to have to change everything, aren't you? All your print, all your everything else that you've done, you know, in that name, right?
The concept still stays the same.
Right.
Yeah. Rent a CFO.
rent a CFO. I mean, it's an interesting concept when you think about it. I mean, I would imagine that if there are people really trying to run a business and they're very hands-on, it would be ideal to have somebody like you come into the company and do all the work that they can't find time to do. Is that really it in a nutshell?
Well, it is, Mark, to a point. A lot of business owners are very focused on what they're building or serving, you know, whether it's a service industry or if it's a widget industry. You know, they know how to do that really well, but they don't know how to handle the financial end of it or the bookkeeping or the accounting side of it. They don't know if they're actually making money. They see money in the bank, mm-hmm. but they're not sure where they're profitable and where they're not profitable mm-hmm. or how to run their office effectively and build the foundation. A lot of times people just scale and grow because they've got an awesome service or product out there. But without the strong foundation in the admin area, financial area, you can only go to a certain point. So
you want the tools
for your business.
You can be terrific at marketing and be creative and all this jazz, but at the end of the day, if those hands are not firm on the steering wheel of the ship, being the financial side of it and the administrative side of it, you're going to run out of total control, aren't you, eventually?
That's
you
right.
boast that you take special care to understand the unique needs of each of your clients to design custom solutions that exceed expectations. Can you elaborate on that a little for me?
Well, as a CFO, you know, we kind of peel back the onion to see at what point you're making money or not making money. All of our CFOs for hire know every industry. Everybody is strong in some industry, whether it's construction, whether it's retail, or a hairdresser. Really, we pride ourselves on knowing that industry really well and providing the best tools for that business to grow.
Everyone is dedicated, professional, personable, knowledgeable, allowing your clients to focus on growing their business. Are you extra careful how you walk? Are you walking on glass when you go into a business? I mean, you're trying to be nice, but at the same token, you've got to be firm, haven't you?
I think that's what sets us apart from a lot of other accounting professionals. We have a no-nonsense attitude. Maybe it's my New York personality. I'm not sure.
You're tough as hell.
We're tough. But, you know, I think that's why we get hired. I think owners don't need to have that soft side all
right.
the time. They just need to know what's the deal, Susan. How am I going to make money? Where am I losing money? How can I do better? I want to scale my business. Am I ready? Those strong questions need strong answers.
Yes, they do. They do. And you'd be the right one. My wife's also from Long Island, you know.
I do.
Valley Stream. You know that one?
I do know Valley Stream.
Yeah.
I'm a little further east.
Further east? There you go. See, everybody's, you know, she came out when she was 12 with two brothers. Richard and Andrew, but you know, there's a lot of people come out from New York to live in Arizona. She was brought out of here when she was 12. What age were you here when you came out?
I've only been here about 3.5 years.
Oh, so you must have been about 17 then. Is that right?
Yeah, give or take.
Okay.
I've been in the industry a long time.
Okay, so, you know, a fascinating concept, Diane. I mean, would you ever consider something like that when you were building your business? It's like a have gun for travel, only we're talking CEO, right?
Oh, absolutely. And one of the biggest mistakes we made when we started our business was trying to do our financials ourselves and doing our bookkeeping, and that was a mess. So CFOs are really important to any business because not only do you need to have your day-to-day stuff done, your bookkeeping and stuff like that and taxes, but you also need to know how to grow, like Susan said, and projections are really important. I was working with a client recently who is actually turning away business because they don't have the resources, the manpower, to accept more business.
Oh, that's sad, isn't it?
It is. And I said, so what would you have to do to accept new business? And he says, well, I'd need another truck, maybe one, two more workers. And I asked him, so what would be your ROI on that? And they look like a deer in the headlights. Mm-hmm. They're like, I have mm-hmm. no clue. And that's what Susan does, is to help them crunch those numbers to say, okay, if you get another truck and you hire one, maybe two more workers, how many new accounts do you need to cover that nut and then start being profitable?
Right. Or even projections potentially.
Correct.
Is it worthwhile you having another truck
and
another, you know?
Yeah.
Now, with your company, Sandbrook Benefits, or the Sandbrook Group, do you mainly serve the business market?
Yes. We have a real heavy hand in the small to medium-sized businesses. Our specialty is family-owned and closely held corporations, which means that the business owner is actively engaged in that business on a day-to-day basis.
Okay.
And they're the ones who need our services the most.
Now, when we talk about family-owned, often the picture or the vision comes up. We see mom and pop maybe working out of the garage, and the son comes home at four after school or gives a hand.
Well,
this isn't the case, is it? Mom and pops can be quite substantially...
Absolutely. We have thriving businesses here in Tucson, and the Tucson market really is built on small business. And we have thriving businesses that have been generational even, and that's kind of where I come in, because sometimes you have mom or dad and they're looking to retire and they've got their kids working in the business probably from the time that they could stand up. And sometimes that's an appropriate succession plan and sometimes it's not.
Right.
So we need to really dig in there and see, number one, if the kids are willing, if they're able, and what that looks like and how that's going to transist.
I wonder what the percentage would be of children of these families, mom-and-pop businesses, that have no interest whatsoever of going or taking over the business.
It's fairly high.
And it is,
isn't it? In fact, there is another business in town whose name, obviously, I won't mention. And the son took over the business, and within 3 years, the business was defunct.
Right.
You know, they just kind of ran it into the ground. Sometimes being handed something that's already substantial is not the best thing, because they think that they don't have to work. Because they're just given this.
Yeah, but, you know, Kim, to me, when you hear something like that, I'd also think that maybe they didn't want to do it. It wasn't their passion.
I think or they didn't have the business acumen to run the business.
And they feel maybe that they've got to do it to please mom or dad or to do the right thing because all they built it up. Is there a lot of that, Diane, goes on?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. You know, sometimes they feel dragged into it. I was talking to a gentleman just at a breakfast meeting that Susan and I happened to be at the other day, and he had done other things and then had taken over the family business when his father retired. And he's, you know, he's on board, but I think that he'd rather be doing something else.
Do you ever advise for the mom and dad situation, the business owners, to sit down with the family and talk it through, discuss it, talk it all out?
Oh, absolutely. And that's where some of the special dynamics comes in, because a lot of times they need to have somebody help them with that conversation. That would not be my strong point. I would bring somebody in who's kind of geared for that and has skill set in coaching a family-owned business, because the dynamics and the emotional aspect needs to also be covered.
All that goes into that. So give us an idea how you go about bringing all that to that particular business. Do you go to them, or do you ask them to come to your offices?
Well, it could be either way. Generally, I go to them because I like to see the lay of the land, how that office is run, who all's there, other key employees, people who are maybe running that business on their behalf, who may not be part of the family, but a lot of these small businesses, their employees are like family, and they include them in a lot of the major decisions.
Right.
So they also need to be included in that dynamic. So I generally go to them, and we do an assessment.
Right.
And we take a look at what's really going on, what are their goals, what's their time frame. You know, if they want to get out of the business in 2 years, we have to really step it up and get things going quickly. Mm-hmm. If they say, I want to work for the next 10 years, then obviously we have more time to do some planning.
Are there any particular types of businesses that benefit more from your services than others, do you think?
Well, I'd have to say that they have to have a fairly substantial business. You know, they have to have revenue. I look for at least $1 million a year of revenue, so that takes out the little garage rent.
Now, that's an interesting point there, though. But $1 million a year is gross turnover.
That is their gross revenue.
That's
not
the
their
gross
net.
Revenue. It's a long way from the net, right?
Yeah,
depending.
That's absolutely true.
Because I've been told many times that's nothing. In a small business, it sounds, you know, Mickey Mouse. We're going to go to Paris every week, right?
Right.
But no.
No.
What would be the average net? Could you put a finger on that out of $1 million turnover?
Well, you know, that it really depends on the type of business, because if they have hard assets, like they run trucks and they have equipment and or inventory, obviously a large chunk of their revenue is going to go for that aspect. Obviously, salaries. Their payroll is numero uno. Benefits happens to be maybe line number two, depending on the business. So a service-oriented business is great, because then you can just kind of clean it up and you see money coming in and money going out. That being said, if they do have other assets, then that has to be taken into account too.
And well, there's a lot more to it than meets the eyes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You do that.
Absolutely.
Thank you. That's interesting. We're going to come back a little bit more on that. Susan, I hear you saying that you take special care of people, and whom are you recruiting, though, to represent the company? I mean, do you go and do every one of these clients yourself?
Well, I do touch every single client. I also go out every quarter and meet with all of my clients to make sure that we're on track.
So you literally press the flesh, do you?
I do. Every quarter. Doesn't matter. You know, if it might happen right after the quarter or within 30 days of that quarter ending.
All right.
Because I do think that it's very important, being the face of the company and taking pride in our work and knowing each of my clients.
Okay, so let's go back to the beginning. You find the client and introduce yourself and the company.
That's correct.
And you would sit down and you would discuss that company, right?
I have their kind of like an intake form that I go over with them and a process so that I can make sure that we're a right fit for them. Not everybody's a right fit. We want to, like Diane said, you know, we're looking for a particular client that's really serious about their business.
Right.
You know, planning is super important.
Do you turn away much business?
I do turn away some. I wouldn't say much, because usually they've called me and I don't do any advertising, Mark, so it's word of mouth. So that being the case, I've got like-minded clients.
Okay.
So that's the reason why I don't turn down a lot of work.
Well, it sounds a luxury, really, to be able to have that today. It's pretty good for you. I mean, you get the say, don't you, whom you want to work with? Because I guess it's going to save you energy and time down the track anyway.
And it saves them time and energy as well.
Right.
I don't want to waste anybody's time. You know, they have to be able to commit to the process and be willing to listen to some hard advice and take that advice and run with it.
Now, East End representative is a QuickBooks certified pro advisor, CFO, and accountant. Okay, let's elaborate on that for us.
Sure. Each one of my people that work for me, we are all certified pro advisors, which means Intuit has laid out a bunch of tests that we have all passed to make sure that we are QuickBooks certified. I'm proud to say that we are all now advanced certified, not an easy test. I'll tell you, Mark, it took all of our heads together to kind of pass all those tests.
Mm-hmm.
But I boast that we are proud diamond level advisors.
Okay, so they have their own levels. Now, how many staff do you have working for you? Are they individual contractors, I gather?
Correct, and I have six working for me.
Six?
I have two CPAs on staff, and I have four CFOs and one bookkeeper.
Okay, so you've done the meet and greet, you've done the intake, you've agreed to work together, but you then explain that somebody you're going to dedicate to their tasks so they get to meet them and so on. They don't feel like, I guess I'm getting at you, don't dump them.
Absolutely not. And that's why I go in every quarter to make sure everybody's still happy.
Because I'd be a bit, you know, thing if you did that to me, you know.
Sure. Well, when you call East End Business, you get me directly.
Sure.
So I'm there to answer questions at all times. Anytime I have a sub in a business, every email, every phone call, I'm included on.
That's very good, isn't
it? So I always know at every moment where every project is.
That's excellent. You don't throw them out to the paddock. No, I guess not.
No, not
so
at
what
all.
Do you work in, Dropbox with everything or Google Drives? How do you stay on top of it all?
Honestly, it's email.
Straight out,
and phone calls. I, you know, we're in a technology-based world.
It
works great for a lot of things, but I don't think that's what builds client relationships, Mark.
No, it doesn't.
I think that talking to somebody, picking up a phone, it matters.
Even talking to somebody, too.
Talking. T-A-W.
I'm taking the mickey out of you. Don't worry about it. I get it all the time. You're naughty. Trust me.
We call it high-tech, high-touch.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so you have the technology, and we have to use that, but we want that high-touch because the clients still want to know who they're dealing with. They want to have a live person.
No way.
Yeah. Diane's right.
Is she?
It's true.
Yeah, absolutely. See, you guys are doing that. I mean, Kim, have you had any of these issues at all, or do you just handle everything? You don't call on help from anybody, do you?
Oh, I think great leaders figure out where their weaknesses are and call on experts to fill in for those weaknesses.
You're executive director of the Bowl. Can you give my listeners a brief background on what your role is? What are your duties, basically, in a given week?
Sure. So I am responsible for the overall execution of the bowl game, and that's going to happen on December 29th this year, which is a Saturday. We're very excited about
September
that.
September 29th?
December.
I was going to say, December 29th. It's only a few days after Chrissy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good time, really, isn't it? There are people around.
Oh, it's a great time. Well,
big numbers last year, from what I remember,
yes,
in attendance.
We had nearly 40,000 people in Arizona Stadium last year, which was our highest attendance.
And, of course, there's a lot of alumni of the various teams that play off in the bowl. Mm-hmm. They could come from anywhere in America, right?
Exactly.
And that's good for the town. People come in, they stay, accommodation. I know it's all worked out, but roughly, is there a dollar amount that they've worked out now, what this bowl can generate in reference to the businesses of Tucson, accommodation, restaurants, food, anything else, pubs, booze, you know, along those lines? Is there a rough figure?
Yes. Last year's game, the 2017 game, produced over $33 million in economic impact for this region.
Wow.
And that was only second to the amazing gem and mineral show that comes to Tucson.
That's big, isn't it, that
yes,
thing?
Yes, we're very proud of that number.
Gem and mineral. My dad used to have an opal mine way out in the outback in Australia in a place called Lightning Ridge. It's where the famous true black opals come from, Lightning Ridge. And I remember people there talking about, you know, going over to America to this gem and thingo festival. They come from all over the world, don't they?
They do, yes. Very fortunate to have that here.
That's good. So $33 million from a bowl game, you know, playing football.
Yes.
But it's not the adults, it's kids. It's college.
Yes.
And it's even now, explain what the sub-level is here. It's not the big colleges as we know them, right?
Sure.
What is the NCAA represents the next level down, but it's still great football.
Yes. So basically in college football, there are the Power Five, in Division One college football, there's the Power Five conferences, and then there's the Group of Five conferences. And our teams come from two conferences in the Group of Five, which are the Mountain West and the Sun Belt. And we've got a terrific spread of teams in both of those conferences. The Mountain West is probably geographically much more closer to Arizona, with most.
That's the Colorado one, isn't it?
So they have teams throughout California, Colorado, Wyoming, Nevada.
Yeah, okay, so that's all west. Right, and
yes.
New Mexico, okay. Mm-hmm. And the other one, though, now the other five?
The Sun Belt Conference.
Sun Belt, mm-hmm. Right.
And their teams consist of South Alabama, Southern Georgia, Texas State, Appalachian State. They've got a great number of really of strong football programs there.
Well, I'm impressed. You've remembered everything, and you've got nothing in front of you. You're listening to Kim Adair, and she's the CEO of the famous Nova Home Loans Bowl. Who won it last year?
New Mexico State University.
And they're called the Aggies, remember?
They are. We actually, last year's game was played by Utah State and New Mexico State, and both of them are Aggies. Both of their mascots are Aggies.
Both their mascots. Yeah, it was fabulous. Is there any talk about predictions for this year?
Oh, boy. Football hasn't even started yet, so we're excited. Give us a few more weeks, and we'll start putting some predictions out there. But
all right.
We're excited to see which teams come to Tucson this year for our game.
What is it, do you think, Kim, that makes this bowl game different from the others?
You know, our chairman of the board, Ali Farhang, says that this bowl game is like those bowl, like the way bowls were born to be. It's very community oriented. It's that the whole community has stepped up and really supported this game. And what defines this game, you know, aside from all the other bowl games, is that 100% of the net proceeds go to local charities.
Right.
So we are very concerned and committed to making sure that we fill up Arizona Stadium, we sell out Arizona Stadium, because each open seat that we look up into the stands and see is a symbol that, you know, those dollars could have gone to local charities here in Tucson and in other places. So we want to sell out Arizona Stadium and give as much money to charities as
possible. Well, last year's game was very exciting, value for money. But there's also not just the game, there's lots of other events go on during that particular week, right?
Absolutely.
It's really called what, Game Week or Bowl Week?
We call it Game Week. It's our Bowl Week, but we call it Tucson's Football Festival.
Yeah, that's great. And there's, now give us an idea. I know there's dancers and there's things to go to. Give us an idea.
Sure. So a few days, some of our events are closed to the public because they're specifically for the teams, but a few days before the game, we take both teams out to Old Tucson and we have a terrific players party out there for them. Some of these football players have never been to the Old West and they never have seen, seen the Cowboys and the Old Town, and we do a bull riding contest and a shootout with stuntmen, and they have a terrific time. And then the night before the game, we have our downtown Rio Nuevo block party.
And this is not for the players. This is for the public.
This is for the fans and the cheerleaders and the band. And they come out and they showcase their talents. And we'll have a headliner band this year, which is to be announced. But we're very excited. Last year, we had a lot of people attend the downtown block party.
So why is it, do you think, Kim, that Tucsonans should attend?
Well, first of all, you have two teams that will be out there playing like this is their national championship game, not just another bowl game. I mean, for the student athletes, this is a really big moment in their life, and so they're going to really see some good football. But more importantly, this is a festival for everybody, people who love football and aren't a fan of football. We have entertainment. We've got special events. We've got wonderful people. Last year, we had over 13,000 seats underwritten for heroes, so for active military veterans.
Yep.
Emergency response.
Great deal for the vets.
Yes. Yeah.
And active military, too.
Active military.
And we have the jets flying over as well.
Yes. So it's a very patriotic event. And then it's a lot of fun. This is an event that it doesn't matter who's playing, frankly. It's not something you want to miss.
Does this event kind of catapult the team to the next level of football as well?
Absolutely. The story from last year with New Mexico State University, it was the first time in 57 years that they had gone to a bowl game, and that Las Cruces was ecstatic. And 57 years ago, when they went to that last bowl game, they played Utah State in that game. And so this was a rematch all these years later, and New Mexico State University won that game in overtime. Mm-hmm. That game was ranked the 8th best college football bowl game of the year, and their story was amazing. It was like they had won the Super Bowl. They rushed the field. They were ecstatic. And all of those people in Las Cruces, they shut out the lights in Las Cruces and traveled here to Southern Arizona for that game. We had nearly 40,000 people in the stands. It was a really fun story.
Wow, Diane, isn't that fabulous? Fabulous to hear. Yeah. Makes my skin come up there. It's great.
I'm a big supporter of football, number one. Number two, Tucson, you know, original. And I was out of town last year and missed that. So
we'll have to get you there this year.
Well, hearing you, I am planning on staying and doing that. I'm thinking of who I can go with.
Oh, terrific.
Bring my girlfriends.
You can go with me.
All right. You got it,
I
Susan.
I haven't been.
Yay.
So
it'll be fun.
It's fabulous. So, Kim, how do people get involved in the game? I know it's too early to buy tickets yet. We'll touch on that. But if there's anybody that is listening to the show today, No Glass Ceiling on Business Radio X, and they say, you know what? I've never been in 3 years. Maybe I should be a good patron. Maybe I should be a good local Tucsonan, because all this money's going to charities anyway. Mm-hmm. It's not like it's a private business, but somebody's getting fat off the land on this one, a kid's playing football. $33 million raised, right?
In economic impact.
The game itself, though, raised for charities that you had to deal out was how much?
Yeah, we gave over $200,000 last year.
$200,000. Wow. And where did it go? go to? Give me an idea.
It went to organizations. It went to teacher organizations. It went to the Boys and Girls Club of Tucson. It went to just a variety of charities throughout Tucson.
Yep. And big checks and nice photographs go with it all. It's fun. And there's a luncheon. You know, it's a not-for-profit thing, Diane. But as you know, because the other day we had the CEO on from Ronald McDonald House on Tucson Means Business. And she made it very, very clear that it's all very well running a not-for-profit, but you know what? You're running a business.
Oh, absolutely. A nonprofit has to be run the same way as a business. And I was just talking to somebody the other day who had actually worked as a HR person for a nonprofit, and I was telling her about my succession program. She says, nonprofits need that too. And I said, absolutely. She says, you know, we really struggled. And then when you don't have a lot of revenue, it's really hard to make that plan. So having extra money coming in takes care of a lot of different needs and blesses everybody.
My word. So this is No Glass Ceiling. It's coming to you from live from the Stuart Title Studio in Broadway, on Broadway, in Tucson, Arizona, wherever you may be. We have three wonderful ladies on in the No Glass Ceiling show today. The Chief Executive Officer of Sandbrook Group, that's Diane Kelly. We have Susan Pisano, or Pisano, correctly.
Pisano.
Pisano, who's the CEO and owner of a very interesting business titled East End Biz. Are you going to tell us the new name of your company?
I haven't released that yet.
All right. All right. Okay.
No, I'm just to come to, soon.
I wanted
to
an exclusive. Yeah. That's all. But she goes into companies as to help you out and, you know, as a CFO, and then puts staff in there to turn it around and leaves you free to go and do everything else that you need to do.
I'm even happy to teach classes. If you have
you do that as well?
Yeah. If you have bookkeepers on staff that you feel need to step it up a notch, I'm happy to go in and teach classes. It's, you know, QuickBooks Online is really the hot commodity right now.
Right.
So I was thinking of a radio show for you, Mark. It should be maybe QBO. What do you want to know?
That's fantastic. Why don't you host that?
I think I should.
That would be very good. We'd love to have you on the network. That's very good. We're here to do that. See, we don't lean left like a lot of media does. We don't lean right. We lean business. And we're here to help the, you know, 500,000 small businesses, not necessarily the top 500. So keep that in mind. Now, Diane, you also serve the senior market.
Yes.
This is Medicare plans,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it sure is.
Okay.
So anybody...
There's still a lot of confusion out there with this, you know.
Well...
Can you clarify any?
I sure can.
Okay.
We call it alphabet soup. A, B, C, and D.
Okay, alphabet soup.
Those are the parts of Medicare. And
right.
Yeah, so when we work with seniors, anybody who turns 65 who's worked basically 10 years in the United States, contributed to Medicare, is eligible for coverage. When they turn 65, they immediately get an option to go into Medicare. Well, it's not really much of an option anymore. They kind of sort of have to, unless mm-hmm. they're working for an employer. They can stay on the employer plan indefinitely. But once they go into Medicare, there's a lot of other decisions that they need to make, and there are several different options available to them. So we sit down and go through the ABCD, explain all the parts, what's available to them, any relevant costs that they may incur in addition to Medicare Part B, which has a premium associated with it. And it's really a great service. And I've had people who I've met after the fact go, where were you when I was going through this? Because mm-hmm. they get inundated with material from lots of different places, and it's confusing.
Well, here's the other thing with running a small business, medium-sized business, doesn't matter. All the stuff you've got to stay up with and the latest. And I mean, what about the business protection assessment?
Okay.
How does that work?
Well, basically, when we go into a business and they want to take a look at how their business is running from a financial standpoint, where any of the gaps or holes might be, we sit down and we do this assessment, which basically asks them about 20 different questions, kind of like what Susan said, where we do an intake. And we find out what they have going on, what their situation is, what their plans and goals are mm-hmm. for the business, if they're looking to scale, if they're looking to exit at some point in the near future, and then we come back in with recommendations. We can also do a business valuation. A lot of times when you talk to a business owner, they tell you that their business is their retirement plan, right?
Right.
And then you say, well, how much is that business worth? and they grab something out of the blue sky that has no basis in reality.
Right. I hope to God it's a couple of million.
Right.
Or enough to take my darling on three cruises.
Yeah, they wish. Or they look like a deer caught in the headlights because they have no idea.
Right.
So we can do what's called a soft valuation. It's not something that you can take to the bank and get an SBA loan on, but it's a starting point so they can see exactly what potential their business has and where they're at right now,
right,
and then how to get where they want to go.
So in effect, an owner can get all types of information from this assessment deal.
Exactly.
Which is a darn good thing to do then.
Oh, absolutely. There's a story I heard recently, a very large Tucson business, and the owner passed away. And at age 62, which happens, and my own husband passed away this past November at age 62, so it kind of stuck in my brain. And basically, if he had not taken out a significant life insurance policy the year before he passed away, that business wouldn't be here today.
Mm.
You know, and that's like 35 years ago, and that business is still thriving here in Tucson,
right,
because somebody had the foresight to make sure that they had it financially protected.
Well, there you go. The reason for insurance, you know, another
exactly.
good reason for businesses particularly.
Exactly.
You can work for 40 years building a business and a company, and it doesn't mean if something happens like that and you do go.
Yeah.
The good Lord calls you, that's it.
Yeah.
You can't take it with you, can you?
No. And I had a client years ago who was a heating and air conditioning company.
Right.
And he was up on his own roof doing his own, fell off, broke both legs, and he was in and out of surgery and therapy for the next year. He almost lost that business.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So with the right financial protections, he would have been able to continue to pay his employees.
Okay. So this Diane
rent.
Kelly, this is the lady I'm telling you. You've got to get this lady, you know, sit down and make. Do you like tea or coffee?
Oh, I like coffee.
You like coffee?
With cream.
Okay, with cream. So you get that going. All right. Now, wow. You know, you really made me think, you know, for businesses. I'd hate to lose it after years of building.
Well, not even after years. What if you're in your business for 2 years or 5 years and you're working hard, but something happens? Maybe you get sick or hurt. Right?
Okay.
So who's
the unexpected?
Gonna, yeah, exactly. So what
right.
we're doing is planning against the eventuality that could happen. It doesn't mean it's going to. Hopefully not.
Mm.
But if you don't have a plan, what you're doing then is dealing with crises.
And that's invaluable information
yeah.
at any point in your business, honestly.
It
I mean,
is.
Having Diane come in, whether it's a young business or a business on the way out, or like you said, succession planning,
mm-hmm.
that information's invaluable at any point in your business.
Susan Pisano, okay, I'm a CEO. I already have a bookkeeper. Why do I need someone else?
Well, because we can take the bookkeeping data and turn it into valuable guidance for your business. We analyze and interpret numbers, turn them into forecasts, actionable insights, and tools to make decisions as you scale your business.
So it's a lot more in depth.
It is a lot more in depth.
I have okay. another good reason to bring Susan in.
Yeah.
I had a client years ago who had a trusted employee who was doing all their bookkeeping, all their accounting.
Right.
That client traveled a lot. He was a scientist. They did all kinds of things all over the world, China, everywhere. Well, come to find out that trusted employee had been embezzling, taking money out of that business, not paying their vendors.
Break your
so
heart.
So having oversight like Susan,
mm-hmm.
that would have a far less chance of happening.
Well, I would love her for that because, you know what, I'm just a gullible old soul. I trust everybody.
And that's what
And
they
I wouldn't
did.
Have a business.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If I have a CFO, do I need a CPA at the end of the year?
You're always going to want to have an eye on your taxes. So a CFO gets everything tax ready. And while we have an eye on taxes, a CPA is going to know the law. And they're going to apply that to the best way to have
to
your...
mitigate it.
Yeah, to yeah. mitigate yeah. tax risk, to mitigate... you know, again, if you're doing planning and you know what your end result is, that CPA is going to know how to get you there.
How many businesses go to the CPA with stuff still in the shoebox, right?
Yeah.
With Susan, everything's organized and it's all lined up.
Is that really, that still goes on, right?
Oh,
yes,
my gosh.
It does.
I mean, even I do an Excel spreadsheet of every cent I spend, you know.
Okay. Oh, I know who you are.
Even the Subway for lunch.
Okay, but that's a step up from the shoebox.
Which you'd get nothing back. You only get 50%, I think, from the IRS.
Well, that law is changing
on entertainment
as well.
And expenses.
Yeah, you get get nothing now.
Oh, that's disgusting.
It's called marketing.
Don't they want to encourage people to go out and to get business and go to, I mean, I love doing business over lunch.
Well, unfortunately, people have overstepped that rule, so they've had to trim it back.
Not so much the lunches as it was the high-end entertainment, like buying the box at the game.
Yeah, see, that's not fair. They've killed it for the little guy.
That's true.
You are right.
That's true.
They've killed it for the little guy. Okay. I mean, you used to be able to get, not that I ever did, because I could never afford it, but in those growing up days, they used to, even in Australia, you could take a client for a game of golf.
Right.
You could write all that off.
Yeah.
You could write lunch off afterwards.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, you might come away with a $10,000 order or something or other. But Susan, your client says, I've been trying to get a loan, but the bank says I need my financials in order. Funny about that. I'm not sure what that means.
Well, a lot of times banks need, especially now, lending is very tight, and people are looking at financials with a different eye than they did years ago. When a lot of business owners are asked for their financials, they really don't even know what that consists of. When it consists of a profit and loss and a balance sheet, bigger eye on the balance sheet. And a balance sheet being a cumulative report over the years of your business, you really need to make sure that that's in order. And you don't want to just hand over any kind of piece of paper. You want to have somebody like myself look at it, understand it, explain it to the owner before handing it over to the bank, and be assured that what we hand over is going to come back with a yes on that loan.
How many clients do you get say to you, look, my business grew so fast, Susan, I'm feeling overwhelmed. I'm not even sure if I'm making money.
Yeah, that's a good majority of the clients.
Really?
It really is. Again, they're so great at what they do, and they just jump on that, and they run, and unfortunately, they forget about what they, you know, the foundation of their business.
Right.
So that's where we come in.
Well, I'm almost forgetting their mission statement, so to speak, and what they're all about. Kim Adair is the who? Kim Adair. I've never heard of her. Well, you're going to now. She's the executive director, CEO. That's the big cheese of the Nova Home Loans Arizona Bowl, and I'm proud to have her in my little studio today here at Stuart Title on Broadway in Tucson, Arizona. Now, let's recap about the bowl, Kim. The correct title is what?
The Nova Home Loans Arizona Bowl.
And why is that?
Nova Home Loans graciously stepped up to become our title sponsor, and they are a terrific company that is really invested in the community and in nonprofits here locally, and want to ensure that this, they saw the wonderful impact that this game could have on this community, and as a result, financially invested in the game as the title sponsor.
Good on them. See, they're smart. You know, trying to talk to some companies sometime is like a deer in the headlights, as you say, about cause marketing, about good marketing, and then the community. You know, a lot of smart companies in America are going that way now instead of the traditional advertising dollar.
That's true.
To do what they call cause marketing, to be associated. But this is a not-for-profit, and the money goes everywhere. So it's called the Nova Home Loan Bowl because of that particular reason. It's not a private money-making deal, and it is a not-for-profit. Let's just delve a little bit deeper on that. This thing doesn't run on its own. There's people everywhere.
Yes.
A lot of staff, a lot of overheads or not?
No, we actually are lean and mean as far as staff goes. We have 4 full-time employees, and we have some contract people that help us with very specific roles with the bowl. And then we work with the Arizona Sports and Entertainment Commission this year to help us with our bowl game and football services.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to ask you a question that is just an honest question, okay?
Sure.
You might only have 4 staff full-time, which are full bore, and you're one of them. You're the CEO. You're not just running the 4, you're running the whole show, and that's all the volunteers as well and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
These 4, you're not paid exorbitantly, are you?
No.
Because a lot of people think with not-for-profits, that's where all the money goes.
No.
You know?
No. Nope.
Nowhere near it. I'm not going to ask you.
Not.
Don't worry. I'm not.
I'm a firm believer that you should pay people the fair wage.
Yes.
And certainly the people that we have working for the bowl are professionals, and who accept this position for the love of the game, for the love of the community, and we pay them fairly, but boy, like in most companies, you have valued employees that really deserve a lot more.
Yeah.
And I wish I could give them a lot more than that we're giving them, but because they deserve a lot more. But they're doing it for the love and the passion of the game in the community.
Yep. And it's go ahead.
They get the satisfaction of knowing that they're part of something bigger than themselves. And I think that's what you're talking about, Mark.
Yes, I really do.
Companies that are really looking for ways to give back to the community.
And I find that runs rampant here in Tucson, to be honest with you. We talked about I come from New York, but we're very community oriented also, but I've never seen community like I do here in Tucson.
Yeah. It grows on you.
It does.
Like a rash.
Now.
So how much money was raised last year, Kim?
We raised over $200,000 that went back directly into the local charities. But we also help with the schools. So the football programs that come here also generate a lot of revenue. And those are basically nonprofits as well. And that money is back reinvested into the universities.
Fantastic. So do you select different charities every year to give the money to?
Yes, we do. And this year we're actually very much formalizing that process. And we're doing matching grants this year. So we want to even double the amount of money that we're giving back into the community.
Right.
So charities, local charities can apply for those matching grants.
Well, I was going to ask you, is there a system that this happens? How does it happen?
Yeah, so next week on our website, you'll click on charity, on the charity tab, and you'll be able to download and fill out a matching grant form. And then you'll be able to turn that in. And then after the game, probably in January or February, we'll be able to identify how much money we have to go to charity. Mm-hmm. And we'll make those allocations out to the charities that have applied.
Okay, so matching grant means what? Someone else gives a dollar and you match what that company is given or what the individual is given?
Yes. So, for instance, this past year we gave nearly $90,000 to the Boys and Girls Club and they had a matching grant for that. So they went out and found a community a benefactor who said, if you get that $90,000, I will match it. And so, and that's basically what we did. So they were able to raise $180,000 off of that gift.
Is that a good club?
A lot of difference in
doesn't it? $90,000 from someone privately.
Yeah. When you go to a benefactor and you can say, if you give me X amount, it means that I'm actually going to be able to double your money immediately. That's very persuasive.
My word, it is. And the Boys and Girls Club. Now, what the effect of what they do in this city? Can you share that a little more, the good work they do?
Absolutely. The Boys and Girls Club of Tucson, they save kids' lives. And that's literally the truth. I've seen it happen over and over. So giving children a safe place to go after school where they can learn new skills, they're safe, they can have a free meal and snacks, they can play basketball and football and all types of sports, they can have art classes and learn about technology. These are opportunities that many of the kids that the Boys and Girls Club serve don't have. Many of them would otherwise be roaming the streets or going home to empty homes and getting into trouble. And so this is an opportunity for them to stay on the straight and narrow and really improve and develop in their lives.
How old are the children that go there?
8 to 18.
You know, after hearing the news, it's a little time back, because this is not data, we're always online here, but, that Chicago business is disgusting. If some of those youths had a chance like the Boys and Girls Club early days, I wonder, it's such a good thing, those impressionable years and having I was in the Scouts, and my mum worked all day. And, I come home from school, I do my homework and help and do little things I had to do. Then I do my job, if I was delivering papers or medicines for old people or whatever. But I would then go to the Scouts and I'd hang out till she could get home and so on. And they were great for me. Mm-hmm. I think a child needs something to belong to in something like that, to go to that. So that's great. Mm-hmm. Well, you must be excited, Kim, looking forward to this year's game, December 29th.
December 29th. It's a Saturday. It's the first time we'll have the game on a Saturday.
Oh, that's cool. Now, how's that going to affect everything else that's going on, do you think? Was that looked at?
Bring in more people, for
absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. So as I mentioned, we're really interested in filling that stadium and selling out the Arizona Stadium so we can give a lot more money to charity. And we felt like our best shot at that was as having a game on a Saturday morning.
Okay. I know it's early, but people can go to your website now, read a lot more, get more information, understand if they can want to be involved, all that type of thing. So the site is what again?
The site is NovaArizonaBowl.com. NovaArizonaBowl.com.
There we go.
And tickets will be on sale September 7th.
Oh, cool.
Give me an N. Give me an O.
That's great. That's great. Young lady, you have proprietary software, Susan, not QuickBooks. Okay, it's a question. Somebody did ask me, you're going to be interviewing. So I said, yeah. Okay, ask her this. What happens if a client says, I have proprietary software, not QuickBooks? Can you work with that?
I can work with any proprietary software. Chances are they integrate with QuickBooks. Some proprietary software does not have an accounting function to it. Because I'll give an example. I have several yoga studios out of state as well as here in Tucson as clients, and they use something called MindBody. That helps them a lot with some information and scheduling, but they're really not going to get the tools they need to grow their business from that. So I'm always going to suggest accounting software, which most likely would be QuickBooks, and we can integrate with anything.
Now, we touched on it earlier, but you're very highly qualified in the QuickBooks deal, a diamond, right?
Diamond level advanced pro advisor.
Okay, a diamond level advanced pro advisor. You can teach this? Do you have classes separate from what you do to teach this for businesses?
I find that a lot of business owners actually don't even know how to read a financial statement, Mark, and so that's not uncommon, and I like to teach them in very, very simple terms how to read a financial statement. I think that while they feel confident in giving that task out to somebody else, they should always know what's going on in their business.
There you go. Do you agree with that, Diane?
Absolutely. That's the one key that they need to have to know how they're going to grow that business.
Yeah. And they need that to then have Diane come in and take a look at all of that information to plan for their succession.
There you go.
Yeah, we would need that for the business valuation. We need three years of the corporate tax returns.
Now, speaking of that, there's something I'd like to know. How does it work here? Does a business automatically multiply by 4 to 5 times or 10 times if it's up for sale?
No.
Well, that's a fallacy, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So how does it work?
So marketability is way different from a financial valuation. A financial valuation simply assesses what's left after all the expenses are paid. So a company might be running $5 million a year, but after they pay their salaries and their overhead and everything else, a buyer is going to look at what do I get to keep. All right. So if they have hard assets that have been depreciated, that may not help them a lot. Mm-hmm. If they have recurring revenue, so for instance, a business that has consistent ongoing revenue that they don't have to go out and generate every month.
Right.
You know, sometimes business is one and done. You do a job like a plumber, okay? Mm-hmm. And they do the job and then they're done with that job until the next one comes in.
Right.
But if you have somebody who has a recurring service, say, for instance, a pool service where they're going out and they're cleaning pools and maintaining pools, and they have contracts with those entities, that is recurring revenue. Recurring revenue rates really high when it comes to evaluation.
Wow. Okay, wonderful advice. Talk about three bright birds today. I tell you what, I want to ask you this though. You're all successful. I think it's only fair for anybody that wants to be motivated, you've got to look at this as well. If I asked you, what was your biggest failure? Diane.
Well, I've made a few. From a first marriage, no, I won't say that.
business-wise.
Yeah, business-wise. Probably what I mentioned before of trying to do our own financials when we first started out and getting behind the eight ball and having to play catch-up, that was not fun. So I did learn the hard way on that. Really, being said, like you said before, outsourcing for anything that I am not good at. So I'm not good at graphics. I have a graphic designer who has saved my life. I don't know how to do marketing. I don't know how to do social media. I shouldn't be doing that. That's not where my revenue comes from. So I have learned to outsource everything and not worry about the money.
There you go. That's a big lesson in that one. What about you, Susan?
I think we can all learn from that lesson for sure.
So your biggest failure has been what?
My biggest failure has probably been something that I've learned from and able to teach now, which is scale too soon.
That's the whole idea of a failure.
That's right.
Is to learn and go better from it, isn't
it? And that's what I did, and that's what helps me be more of an expert in what not to do. Yeah.
Has anybody seen Kim? She's gone. I think she was worried about this. You haven't had failures, have you, Kim?
I'm having trouble coming up with an example, Mark, but I can tell you that just on a personal note, being a working mom, you never feel like you're doing either job very well.
Uh-huh.
And so sometimes I feel like I could be balancing better that dynamic. Because, you know,
it's not easy.
It's not easy.
And you're not Robinson Crusoe. There are thousands of women out there trying to do this.
Yes. So I give a lot of a credit to my partner in crime, my husband, who picks up a lot of things for me when I can't make it. And
Mr. Craig, huh?
Mr. Craig.
He's a good man.
He is a good man.
How long have you been married now?
18 years.
Wow. Yes. And still going strong, huh?
Absolutely.
Pleasure to hear that. Absolute pleasure to hear it, as it was today. No Glass Ceiling with Mark Bishop featured Diane Kelly, and she is the Chief Executive Officer of the Sandbrook Group right here in Tucson, along with our friend from the East, Susan Pisano, the founder, president, East End Business Consulting. It's a unique consulting company providing the best CFOs and accounting for every business that is out there. And last but not least was Kim Adair, the brand new, still shiny CEO of the Nova Home Loans Bowl here in Tucson, Arizona. And we wish you so well with that. It's been a great show. I thank the ladies for being here, and I trust that you enjoyed it. And come back again. I think you're going to enjoy another No Glass Ceiling.